Blog Talk Radio.
Here we are. First-time unemployment claims are at their lowest level for the year, another economic development for which Obama and the stimulus program will get zero credit. A gay rights law is passed by the legislature of Utah? Right, and with the approval of the Mormon Church. Good news, bad news, and bad news. Speaking of good news, Lou Dobbs leaves CNN. No longer will they have to stumble towards objectivity or face charges of racism. A major bank takes another family's house and sells it to someone else. It's a mistake, but it's okay. They apologized. Buffett and Gates say the worst of the economic crisis is over. Palin invites Levi Johnston to pop in on Thanksgiving. A hospital nukes a fetus. To make up for it, they offer flowers and coupons to the hospital cafeteria. Good. Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, welcome to Speaking of Everything with Jeff Bushman. That's me. Those subjects and more, including an interview with our special guest, Mabel Leo, an author of 9 books. We'll talk about those books, her main non-fictional character, publishing, and whatever else we can get to during the conversation. If there's time, before she joins us, we'll also talk about oregano oil and acne, something I've been promising to do for a while. And after our conversation, we will be presenting a special endpoint essay on the subject of Veterans Day. And I also want to invite you to join with us either before or during our guest's appearance. You can reach us at area code 347-994-3796. We also have news of the weird, but first, that cup of coffee feels so great in your hands. The aroma goes right to your brain as you breathe it in. The cabin's warming up, and it's warming up because you had the foresight to get the fireplace going for the family, and now the smell of that wood is mixing with your coffee. It took time and work to get to the point you could just get up and go to your cabin whenever you wanted to. But it also took being smart. You were smart enough, for example, to know that if you're in business and have a website, you're really in business when you're also blogging. You went to jeffonblogging.blogspot.com and chose Blog Wizardry to write your blogs for you. It was inexpensive, it was well done, and it increased traffic to your website and your company. Even though the cabin's getting nice and toasty, you can hear the wind blowing through the trees and get a sense of the brisk outside air. What was that noise? You go to the window. A doe and her fawn. It's going to be a good day. Blog Wizardry. jeffonblogging.blogspot.com. And we're back. Talking about the stories we covered in our headlines. In fact, the unemployment claims, that is, first-time unemployment claims, are at their lowest level for the entire year. And this is, after all, November, so that's a good thing. Those have gone down. The overall unemployment rate is still high and too high, but the first-time unemployment claims going down is obviously a good sign. The legislature of Utah, with the approval of the Mormon Church, passed a gay rights law that bans discrimination in hiring, except by religious institutions or religious organizations, and also bans discrimination in most other areas of life if that discrimination is against gay people. The interesting thing about this is that the Mormon Church representative testified before the legislature saying that the law fully complied with the teaching and views of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, also known as the Mormons. Now, the good news is, of course, that a gay rights law seems to be moving towards passage, towards enactment. As most of you know, when the legislature passes a law, the governor still has to sign it, but that probably won't be a problem. The bad news is that it is not a full gay rights law. It does not allow, for example, for members of the same sex to marry one another. And, of course, as you likely know or remember or would not be surprised to know, that same Mormon church was heavily involved financially and in terms of activity in fighting against gay marriage in California, and they won that fight. So that's also bad news. That is, it was not a full gay rights law. But there's an even worse element of this, which may not be obvious to everyone. So let me share my view with you, and you can obviously determine whether you agree. What in the world is a church testifying in front of a legislature for regarding a civil law? And why is the legislature listening? This is a country which stands in large part for separation between religion and government. One only has to read the Federalist Papers, which was written by some of the founders of the Republic, some of the creators of the Constitution, before it was in fact enacted, to see very clearly that Madison, among others, also known as the father of the Constitution, were very much in favor of keeping government out of religion and religion out of government. In Utah, they apparently operate by a different constitution. Religion is very, very intricately involved in the law and in government in Utah. It is not true that the Mormon Church dominates everything, but they are very, very involved. And to say to testify in favor of this legislation suggests that it couldn't have passed without the church's approval. And if that's the case, that's a really bad sign for both Utah and the United States. Some of you may be interested, if you agree with that, by the way, you may be interested in an organization called Americans United in favor, Americans United for Separation of Church and State. They put out a magazine. I assume they have a website. It's a pretty good organization, and the leader of it is actually a minister. They nevertheless fight pretty hard to keep religion out of government, as I said, vice versa. Among other things, they try to get tax exemptions taken away from those religious organizations that are overtly political. We mentioned that Lou Dobbs is leaving CNN. He announced that last evening on his broadcast, and that was his last broadcast. He's not saying what he's going to do from here. There has been some talk around the blogosphere and on some talk shows earlier today, today being November the 12th, that he might be considering running for president of the United States, which would be both great and amusing if you're a Democrat, because the likelihood is that he would tend to split off some votes from whatever, if he ran as an independent, from whatever Republican ran. And if he runs as a Republican, he ought to throw the entire nominating process into a cocked hat, which, by the way, looks very nice if you wear one. Today, it was reported that a major bank, this was here in Arizona, as a matter of fact, a major bank took someone's house by mistake. And here is the story. Chase Bank officials have apologized because they accidentally sold the home of a Phoenix couple, even though they had agreed to a modified mortgage and the payments on that modified mortgage were up to date. The couple, named Zerner, said that the new owner of the house, who had purchased it through foreclosure, posted a notice on the door that led them to discover that the property had been foreclosed. They got the notice that said they had 5 days to vacate. They then called and asked the person who had caused the notice to be put on there who they were, and they said, "We're the legal owners of the house. It went up for foreclosure." So Mr. Zerner then contacted Chase. He said, "We paid them several hundred dollars. They accepted in good faith." And Chase then admitted that the house was sold in error and apologized to the couple. And the rest of the story is going to make you feel warm all over. They said, "We apologize for the confusion over the modification and the parallel foreclosure steps. We've reached out to the Zerners to discuss where we go from here." See, it's not really so bad. They both apologized and reached out. And, they don't have any place to call home. But the bank has reached out. That, I don't know what else anybody could possibly want. Let's see. Warren Buffett and Bill Gates And for those who don't know who they are, you probably are listening to the wrong show. But if you don't, Warren Buffett is the head of Berkshire Hathaway, a very rich man. He owns Geico through his company, Berkshire Hathaway. They own Geico, See's Chocolates. They own a big share of Coca-Cola and the Washington Post. And he recently made a bid for the rail. I guess it was the Atchison, Topeka, and the Santa Fe. He bought the railroad, and some people merely buy the farm, but Warren bought the railroad, saying that he believes that the economy is going to not only pull out but of its doldrums, but is going to do very well, and that's going to involve doing a lot of shipping by train. So that was the investment he made. Bill Gates is the former head of and co-creator of Microsoft, which created Windows and Word and all those other things that you probably have on your computer if you have one. Anyway, they're saying the economic crisis is over, which is good news because I was afraid for them. I was concerned about their economic status, but as long as the crisis is over and they're okay, that's okay with me. Actually, Buffett and Gates are both very smart guys, and which is not true of all rich people, by the way. But does the name George W. Bush mean? Well, never mind. In any event, they're both very smart guys, and they clearly have done some economic analysis of this. I don't know whether they're saying that just to inspire confidence or whether they really feel it's true, but they did say it. They were at a seminar at Columbia University. That's where they were talking and taking questions, and it made the people feel good, so that's worth something under any circumstance. Sarah Palin, you'll remember her. She's the one who is not a quitter. She's the one, and the one who quit as governor of Alaska. She invited her former future son-in-law, Levi Johnston, the father of her grandchild, to pop in on Thanksgiving. She was saying that she wanted him to be part of the family, and she wanted to tell him that he's got a beautiful child and all of that. And let's see what she said. She said, it's lovely to think he would even consider such a thing, she said when she was speaking to Oprah Winfrey. And the program is due to air in a few days, right before the publication of Palin's memoir. She said, he's part of the family, and you want to bring him in the fold and kind of under your wing. So that creates all kinds of images, including one of a turkey, which is probably unkind. But there you have it. I was going to suggest to you that I don't know whether you have one or more children in your home. But if you do, even if you don't, I'll bet you have a child in your home. These days they're called pets. If you have a pet, you know that your companion animal or animals are really your kids, and you treat them like that. Now, if you feel about your pet children the way my wife and I do, you want them to have the best food, the best shampoo and other grooming products, the most enjoyable and safe toys, real meat bones, and the best of everything they need or want, but you also want it to be available at a reasonable price. I've got the answer for you. Pet Lane provides all of the above, great products, very reasonable prices, and you don't even have to leave the house to get them. Just go to petlane.com/Bushman, B-U-S-H-M-A-N, and that's where you'll find all of them. All the best prices, all the best products. You deserve to be able to indulge them, and now you can. petlane.com/Bushman. And we're back. We spoke earlier about a hospital that made a little boo-boo. They nuked an unborn child. Here's the story that came out. A woman named Kelly Aguera started bleeding, and this was 3 months into her pregnancy. And she went to the emergency room because she was afraid that she might be having a miscarriage, and it seemed like the wise thing to do. She arrived at the hospital, which, by the way, is also here in Arizona. And on that morning in 2008, she was put in a room and told to wait for a nurse to come get her. After a bit, the nurse came in and she said, "Carrie?" And Ms. Aguera said, "Yes." She says, I'm going to take you for a little walk. And she led her down the hallway and brought her into a CT scan room. That is where the CT scan was going to take place, CT machine. And Kelly Aguirre said, is this really what I need to have done? The nurse reassured her. She said, yes, that's what the doctor wants. He wants a CT scan of your abdomen. She said, okay. And after the scan, the nurse led her back to her room to wait for the doctor. She told her husband she was scared, thought she'd had a miscarriage, and thought that that's what the doctor was going to come in and tell them. But that's not what happened. What happened is about a half hour later, according to Aguirre, the emergency room physician came in, along with two radiologists and a representative from the hospital's human resources department. She was very concerned, was crying, asked if she'd had a miscarriage, and they said no, she was still pregnant. And she says, I'm not laughing at her, it's a horrible story, but it's amusing because of how insensitive the hospital was. She said that she and her husband thought, man, that's great, she's still pregnant. And they said, well, there is a little problem here. We made a bit of a mistake. We did something we shouldn't have done. And she asked what they meant, and they told her. They said, there's another patient here named Carrie, and you two are about the same age. So we mixed you up. She was supposed to have the CT scan, not you. Now, you need to know that a CT scan is a much more powerful X-ray. And what an X-ray does, backing up a step, what an X-ray does is it throws radiation at you so that the parts that are absorbing the radiation show up differently from the parts that aren't. In other words, radiation passes through the blank spots, if you will, of your body, and the bones and the muscles and all that stuff shows up on an X-ray. Well, a CT scan is even more powerful. If you just have a normal X-ray, you're getting radiation. Not as bad by a long shot, but radiation like would come from a nuclear explosion. With a CT scan, it's much more than an X-ray, and again, still much, much less than a nuclear explosion, but you're getting a lot of radiation. That's not good for a fetus. It's not probably good for us, but it's certainly not good for a fetus. It says in the story that no large studies have been done on the effects of a fetus of performing a CT scan on the pregnant woman's abdomen, but a fetus exposed to radiation can sometimes develop physical and mental growth problems. On the other hand, they'll stay fresh for weeks. In any event, the Aguirres have gotten an attorney, and the hospital isn't commenting, but the fact is that that's what occurred. Now, just as a, not so much as a side note, but a really important reason to be telling this story is this. Every day in this country, there are more than 5 wrong surgeries. I was speaking earlier to our in-house nurse and wife, Alicia, who was saying that there are numerous stories from having been around hospitals and doctors about surgeries where weird things happen. In one instance, a patient was rolled in for a hysterectomy, and a nurse mentioned to the doctor that perhaps before the doctor began the surgery, he might want to look at the patient. The patient said, why? The doctor, rather, said, why? That's not necessary. Everything's in order. She said, doctor, look under the blanket. And the doctor lifted the blanket, or she, whatever it was, and realized, as you might have guessed by now, it was a man. Many are the stories where, and these are not common, but they're common enough, where someone amputates the wrong arm or the wrong leg. There was a story about 2 years ago where they amputated the wrong arm, the right arm, though the left arm was supposed to be amputated. And the hospital in that case thought they were being very generous when they offered to amputate the correct arm for free. In any event, there are 5 surgeries a day that are wrong. Now, we left out something in the Aguirre story, which makes it even more ridiculous in terms of the hospital's insensitivity. The doctors, according to Aguirre, were very nice, and they kept saying they were sorry and so on and so forth. The ER doctor, who was also pregnant, cried and apologized and asked Kelly Aguirre if she wanted free coupons to the hospital cafeteria. She said no thanks, and asked her what kind of flowers she liked so that flowers would be waiting for her when she arrived at home. The baby, in addition to the other things we mentioned, could end up with mental retardation, a low IQ, or growth problems because of the radiation exposure, although one could argue that the IQ couldn't possibly be lower than the people in the hospital. Okay, in any event, that's that story. Horrible. Other thing we wanted to talk about, I believe I mentioned, by the way, that the end of the show, after we've spoken to Mabel Leo, who is due to join us in about 10 minutes, by the way, in case you're sitting with bated breath, or more correctly, if you're a friend or fan of Mabel Leo and have joined us to listen to us, I hope you've enjoyed the rest of the show up to this point. And after the interview is concluded, before we finish, we will have an endpoint essay on the subject of Veterans Day. I mentioned that we have some weird news, and there's some classically weird news, which I'll touch upon in a moment, but you may have heard that, I believe it was yesterday, much of Brazil, Brazil is like is the largest country in South America. It's a very large country. And most of the country experienced a blackout. There were some problems with some relay switches. There were problems with the nation's grid, which, by the way, is a problem for which we are at risk. The Obama administration is studying ways to improve our power grid. But problems with the grid are typically what happens when there is a widespread blackout, as we've had in this country as well. The only reason I'm mentioning the story of Brazil is because a spokesman who was on several radio stations yesterday for the power company in Brazil had a name that was unusual, and I'm not making it up, and I don't know how it's spelled, but his name was Edison Wow. Which is a great name. I mean, how could you have named somebody better to be a spokesperson for an electric company? Edison Wow. Thank goodness it wasn't Edison. Ah! But it was just, you know, Edison Wow. Okay. We do have some other news, however, of the weird. And that allows me to mention to you as well that you can find News of the Weird on your very own. By going to newsoftheweird.com. It's a website. They have daily and weekly columns. We've drawn what we think are some of the, most amusing or peculiar for your enjoyment. But you might want to go to that website on your own to see what else is there. Robin McGee, a law professor in Minnesota, was charged with state income tax evasion. Because she failed to file in 2007, and she filed returns for 2004, 2005, and 2006, just in 2009. She told the St. Paul Pioneer Press that she was unable to file on time because she has extreme attention deficit disorder. Among the lapses of attention, according to people, the prosecutors are going after her, was her claim of 8 tax exemptions, you know, 8 dependents, though she's single and has no children. This is a law professor. Okay. I mean, you wonder why lawyers are like they are, but okay. There was, as you know, a recent political contest in New Jersey. John Corzine lost the governorship to the Republican in that state. But there may be a politician in New Jersey who was even less wise than Governor Corzine. A councilman in Atlantic City, who is also a Baptist minister, is named Eugene Robinson, and is not related, not the same person as the reporter of that name, explained he had no intention of having sex that night in November of 2006 when a prostitute tricked him, good choice of words, into a motel tryst as a setup by his political enemies. He said, "I was waiting for God to send me the woman that's destined to be my Christian wife." And since he hadn't had sex since 1989, he thought perhaps this was the chosen woman. He didn't choose to run for re-election. Why? Who knows? But anyhow, it was. How did I know? I thought she'd been sent to me. don't know if you'll remember this, but one of George W. Bush's brother, it may have even been before George W. was president of the United States, was a businessman. I think it was Neil Bush, but I'm not sure. But in any event, he was in a foreign country, and a woman, he was doing business with some, some company was trying to get him to use his influence, I guess, with his father, the way the story went. And some woman knocked on his door, and he opened the door, she walked in, and she proceeded to have sex with him. And he later said it didn't occur to him that this was anything unusual. He thought he was just extraordinarily fortunate. So, there you have it. I believe that we are now about to be joined by Mabel Leo. Is that you?
That's me.
Okay, good. Okay, everybody, we have with us Mabel Leo. See, I told you we would have you there. How are you?
I'm just fine. How are you?
Good. I hope you haven't found it too boring if you've been listening.
No, in fact, I've been watching all the clocks. I wasn't sure when to call, so I thought, well, I'm just going to jump right in there.
You did just fine.
Thank you.
I was just now reading out or telling story, News of the Weird, and I had one more story about Procter & Gamble and Charmin, but it'll wait until next week.
Oh, thank you.
That's a tease for
that.
People. Well, you know, it's not every day that... It's not every day that, you know, someone pushes aside Charmin for you, so I guess that's
I
a good thing.
I sure like the ending of that last one you were telling. That was great.
Oh, yeah. That was amazing. Well, for those who are listening, Mabel Leo is a writer. She was born in Sailor Springs, Illinois.
Oh, yeah.
And moved to the city where I spent the early years of my life, Chicago.
Oh, I'll be darned.
And, yeah, yeah. And do you know Albany Park?
No.
Do you remember that area?
I was on the south side by University of Chicago.
And more importantly, Comiskey Park.
Yes, yes.
Right? Okay.
A little.
There you go. And she published work. Her first published work was at Hyde Park High School, which was a poem.
Oh, yeah.
And,
oh, my gosh. You have done your homework.
Well, a little bit. And let's see. After high school, she got married, divorced, and married. A couple of us have gone through that, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, it seems like all of us get it wrong the first time. I don't know.
Well, they call that sometimes the trial marriage.
There you go. I like that. That sounds better.
Yeah, some trials are terrible and last longer than others. But, and others are not trials. They're just good marriages.
That's true.
Like your second and mine.
Oh, yeah. Fabulous.
After she was widowed after 20 years, she began writing again and has now written 8 books and change. You have the 9th book in process, right?
Yeah, well, I think it's the 10th book.
You finished it?
Yeah, no.
The 10th book, okay.
Yeah, the 9th book I did, the 10th book, it's a struggle on this one, but I'll worry about that another day.
Okay. And so you've written and published 9 books then?
Yeah, and all because of this strange man, Jack Durant, who I never met, I never even saw. But he just came.
Well, and I want to get into that now. 3 of the books? Is it 3 books that you've written on
Jack
Durant?
Yeah, and there was a play written from my first book, and
right.
A man came over from California. He had been filming in Hollywood, and he filmed the play one night and put it on a DVD for me, so I have that now. Also, a Zoccolo Picture Films Incorporated have taken a 3-year option on my Durant.
I want to talk to you about that in just a moment. But
okay,
but
sure,
the
sure.
The person. No, that's fine. The person to whom you're referring was actually a celebrity here locally, but is also known in other parts of the country. And 3-year books were written about this fellow, Jack Durant, who was, among other things, a restaurateur, right? He had a major restaurant on what's Central, right?
Yes.
Central Avenue in Phoenix, which was for many years is still a main north-south drag in the city.
It is still.
But it was a much bigger deal in the old days. Tell us about Jack Durant and how you happened to cross him and how the books came to be written.
Yeah, he just came into my life. I'll never forget, it was September of 1991. When some friends had told me about the restaurant, and they told me about the loyalty of the customers to the restaurant. I never thought about writing anything about the restaurant because everybody had done that. You know, the great food, the great atmosphere. Restaurant was fashioned after the steakhouses of Chicago. And but one of the guys kept telling me about Jack's stories, and he introduced me to Jack's secretary. She had been there for like 20-some years in the restaurant, had worked for Jack. Jack had since died because this book, none of this would have happened if he'd been alive. He'd have made me stop this real quick. And anyway, I got introduced to Becky, who was the office manager, and she started telling the most outlandish stories about Jack until finally I said, it sounds to me like he's the story. She said, that's what the hell I'm sitting here trying to tell you. She's right about Jack. And so I'm sitting there, and with this woman I never met, and she's calling up people saying, you've got to talk to Mabel Leo. She's an okay gal. Tell her everything you know about Jack. Well, it just grew until I realized they didn't know anything about this man. I mean, they thought they did. Everybody that knew him thought they knew him, but they didn't. He was a completely different person than they thought. The name Jack Durant was only one of his three aliases. They knew nothing
really?
About that. Yes.
So he was living a secret life at the same time,
huh? Yeah, for all this time. He started the restaurant in 1950, and he died in 87. It's still going strong, by the way. The mystique of it is still there. But he hid everything so well that like I said, it took me 5 years to finally find out who this man was, where he was from, what he did for the mob. And then I finally had to run away from home for about 3 days, and I went to the Royal Inns and took a casita because I had to be alone. I had to be able to spread all these papers out and get them in some kind of chronological order where they made sense.
Right.
Because he lied all the time.
And so, essentially, he was a member of the mafia?
Not really. I mean, he was handpicked to...
Right.
become Bugsy Siegel's most closest confidant, which he did, because the mob was spying on, wanted to spy on Bugsy, but they needed someone who Bugsy didn't know, and that any of the people that Bugsy knew, none of his people would know this person. And so Jack spent a couple of years on the road just doing as he pleased until he was finally called into action, and he was sent to Kentucky to learn to run a casino. And then from there...
Well, let me stop you there because a lot of people are not aware who Bugsy Siegel was.
Oh,
Bugsy Siegel was involved to a large extent with the creation of Las Vegas as a gambling center, correct?
Yes. Well, he was and he wasn't.
Go ahead.
I found a friend of Bugsy Siegel's and Jack Durant's. And he remembered them both, of course, very good. And he said... I said something about the movie that came out, you know, about Bugsy, and Bugsy is standing out in the desert seeing this vision.
Right.
And his friend said, that never happened. That didn't happen that way. And so I put the real way it happened in the book. But I said, well, when they made the movie, didn't they come talk to you? And he said, yeah, but it wasn't exciting. He just started this casino, and it grew, and he just kept embellishing on it and adding on to it. And it became very famous because of Bugsy's personality. He was Bugsy. But he didn't stand out there in the desert and yell, I have the vision, you know.
Well, they had to make it cinematically useful.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But so now, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you ask me questions, I'll just answer anything you want.
No, that's what I was going to say to you is that in terms of the first book you wrote on Jack Durant, that was basically a biography and
talking
about his connections.
Yes, and I had no idea. I mean, I just glossed over his gangster days in it because I didn't know this man, and from what I heard, he did have some good points, very few, but he did have them. So I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt, and so I just, you know, like I said, glossed to my editor, said later, Mabel, you didn't say much about Jack's gangster days, write about his gangster days, and that's how the last book happened. But the first one, I wanted to tell his whole story from beginning to end. And that's what I did, and that it's just sold like crazy. I could not believe it, how interested people were in this man.
Did it have a market outside the Phoenix metro area? I mean, did it sell pretty well nationally?
Oh, it went to Greece. It went to Mexico. Yeah. It went to Canada. That was another thing is, you know, I wrote the manuscript. I'd never written a book before.
Right.
Never thought about writing a book before, but this thing grew into that, and so I sent it out to publishers, and of course they send them back. They don't even open them up in the mailroom 9/10 of the time. I finally found an agent here in Phoenix. She kept the manuscript for a whole year before she told me she wouldn't handle it because she couldn't sell it nationally. Well, I knew from what people had been telling me about Jack that it would sell other places. And I thought, well, at least I can sell enough in Arizona to make it worth the trouble. And so I
What led you to believe it would have a market outside of Arizona?
All his secrets. All his secrets.
Okay.
And he was born in Kentucky. Nobody knew that because Jack Durant wasn't his true birth name. And I had a terrible time finding out where he was from. I actually went there, in fact. But it was because of his connections in other states. And I thought,
right.
And people who lived here or people who lived here would buy the book and say, oh, I got to send this book to my friend in California. She loved Jack Durant's place. You know, people. It went all over. I mean, I was...
Wow, that's great.
I was flabbergasted.
Yeah, well, you know, just as there are many people who write books and are surprised when they don't sell.
That happened to me. Oh, yes.
But it can obviously happen the other way, sure.
Well, yeah, and I didn't expect anything. It took me 5 years, like I said, to put this all together, to find out who this man was. And even now, people will come and say, you didn't tell the story about Jack and this time and that time that happened. And then people who, well, let me read you on the back of the cover of the first book. The two biggest, which is called The Saga of Jack Durant.
Go ahead.
I wanted to give him some dignity, so that's what I called it. And Vino Creighton, who was a retired publisher who lived here in Phoenix, he read my book. He called me up, said, "You've got to come and talk to me." Well, this is what he gave me for the cover of the book. Jack was a real part of this town's modern history, and this book brings him back to life. Though this is the author's first book, the swift, organized pace is not that of a beginning writer. My thanks to her for writing it. I mean, I still get chills when I read that.
That's very nice.
From Jack Williams, who's former governor of Arizona. Anyone interested in a unique view of Arizona history should read this book. It tells it like it was. Oh, I just love that.
Terrific. The question I was going to ask you is when you had talked about the agent who didn't want to take on the book because of a lack, as she perceived it, of a national audience.
Right.
How did you ultimately convince that agent?
I didn't. I just...
Oh, you went somewhere else.
I went self-published. Yeah, I had sent it to so many publishers and agents, and then I thought, oh, I'm lucky I've got someone right here, you know, that knows the restaurant, but she wasn't interested. But what got me was that she kept it for a whole year. That's when I wrote a book about Italians while I was waiting. I was always going to go out of my mind. But I knew there were, from the interviews that I had done, that there were enough people in Arizona that would want to know more about this man. And there obviously were. The Arizona Republic did a big article on me the very next morning. I couldn't believe the morning they did that. And for 4 days, my P.O. box was just jammed with people saying, how do I get this book? I mean,
What was it that caused the Republic to write the story? The Republic is the local newspaper, correct?
Yes. And to get in, you know, I thought if I could just get a few lines, I will be so happy. And so I...
How'd you do that?
I called up Mike Clancy, one of the reporters over there, and he said, well, if it's a real book, send it to me, I'll see. I sent him the book. Mm-hmm. He called me up the next day, said, Mabel, I read the whole book last night. Tell me more. And the very next morning, I opened up my newspaper, and there's this wonderful article about it. I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. And that's what sold it. Mike Clancy did. And Dorothy.
That's great.
And Dolores Tropicano. Yeah. Wow.
And then after that, it's kind of one of those things where once it started selling, it started leading to other people reviewing it and so on.
People kept telling people, you know, this was something brand new. This was something nobody had ever done. They had never, I mean, I knew when I started writing, when I wanted to start writing again, I thought, I have to find something new. I had done 3 weekly columns for a very small newspaper in Florida several years before. I thought, well, nobody here knows me, so I'm going to have to find something to write about something nobody's done. And then this guy comes into my life, and it just took off.
A dead man came into your life.
Yeah, and I don't, and you know, and somebody asked me the other day, well, you've gotten 3 books on him, you've gotten a play about him. What are you going to write about him next? I said, I don't know. He didn't tell me yet.
You mentioned the play. You didn't write the play, did you?
No. Terry Earp, a local playwright. She is married to Wyatt Earp, by the way, direct descendant of the Wyatt Earp. And she's written many, many award-winning plays. She's a great lady. And I took my book to her. A friend has suggested, take your book to Terry Earp. She'll love it. And she did. She decided to do a play. The fun part was that she said, we'll just do 5 performances, Mabel. It's a local guy. I just want to have fun with it. That's all. You know, nothing serious. I said, okay. It went for 22 sold-out performances with people waiting outside every single night. Holy no-shows. We could not believe it. The New Times newspaper did like a 6-page spread on it. It was fabulous, absolutely fabulous.
For those who don't know, the New Times is a weekly tabloid paper equivalent to such things as LA Weekly or Village Voice. That kind of newspaper.
Yes, and
depending
on where
you are in the country.
I mean, they had the actor that plays Jack Durant had him right on the front cover. I mean, it was unbelievable. And after every performance, Terry had asked me, everybody wants to know how you did the research to find out so much about this man.
Right.
Would you give a talk after every performance? Well, she's only talking 5 performances.
So why not?
No problem. Right. 22. Then she had to stop the play after 22 performances because the actors had other commitments. But she brought it back.
And you weren't expecting it to go more than 5.
Right, exactly. But it just kept flying. And so then she brought it back several months later for, I think it was 15 more performances. It's just great. Jack has been very good to me. I never met the man. Like I said, I couldn't afford to eat at his restaurant all the time, but when I did, I noticed him, you know. But he did, he's just given me all this. I can't believe it. And it's all his fault.
Yeah.
I wrote all these books.
There you go. Now, the restaurant you mentioned was patterned after a Chicago steakhouse. It's the kind of place you go in it's a darkened room, plush carpets, very nice booths, that kind of thing, right?
Oh, yeah, the red vinyl booths, the red flock wallpaper.
Mm-hmm.
It's very Chicago. Although they have lifted the lights up so that you can see more. But
they
told me at the time, we keep it dark because you never know who's with who.
Yeah. It's funny. I actually saw a person, Charmaine Nameless. I was only in there once. And went in, and not to eat. It was to meet up with somebody. And it turned out while I was there, I saw a former U.S. senator, not Barry Goldwater, in case anyone's wondering, but it was a former, I guess, senator or very high up party official who was there with a woman who was much, much younger than he was. I'm sure it was probably his niece or something, but you know.
Yes, I heard that. Aren't they all?
Yeah, right. Now, you have written more than the Jack Durant books, because you've written 9 books, and only 3 of them, silly as that sounds, were on him. Before I go into the other books, by the way, we have about 12 minutes left with Mabel Leo, so if you wish to call in to speak with her, ask her a question, time is of the essence. If you'd rather just sit back and listen, that's fine, too, but the number here to reach us is 347-994-3796. Anyway, what I was going to ask you was, if you've written all of these books and you started writing books in 1987, I think you said, or 88, right?
91.
Is that when you started in 91. Okay.
91,
that's 18 years. Okay, that's 18 years, which is a relatively long time, but very, very few people write, first off, at all, and those who do, very few can get out 9 books. So I guess the appropriate question is, how did you do that?
Or why?
I mean, to what do you attribute your prolific output?
I just found out I could do it. I mean, you know, after I wrote Jack and all this book about him, and then things started happening, and then I started, one of the things is I wrote a series called the Sailor Springs series, and it's a story.
I was going to ask you about
fiction,
that.
You know, romance, suspense. It starts here in Phoenix, and it goes on to Sailor Springs, of course. But
whence you come?
Yes, from which I come.
Okay.
There's only 150 people there now, but the first book is called Dear Sweetheart, and it's about an email romance that goes bad. And I kind of got started with that because I was in the airport, and you know when you're in the airport and you meet people, you're probably never ever going to see them again, and people
absolutely
things. Yeah, and I guess I have a way of getting people to talk to me, and so women would tell me things, you know, and. After a few trips, you know, going around, I'd get this idea in my head, and about that time was when email was being misused, I'll put it that way, because everybody thought it was confidential, so people could say what they wanted.
Right.
Anyway, that's how this whole series, and then I love Sailor Springs. It's a very historical little town. I wish that people would really pay more attention to it, and it's very difficult if you don't have a lot of money, which they don't in that little bitty town. But it was nationally known years ago because of its healing springs. Anyway, so we have these three books Dear Sweetheart, Deadly Choices, which my cousin, the sheriff, is on the cover, by the way, to show me how to get bodies out of the pond. And then The Dark Secrets. And then I have, the series of the Durant series, now I call it.
Well, but going back to the Sailor Springs series, those are also fiction.
Yes, it's a trilogy. Correct? Yes, and it's fiction, yes.
It is a trilogy, okay.
Oh, yeah, it's a trilogy. The last book is Dark Secrets, and I hope to write another one someday. I have the stories in my head, but I haven't had time to get them out of there.
But here's the real challenge. The real challenge is we all know that if you have two books, it's a book and a sequel. If you write three books, it's a trilogy. What do you call it if it's four?
Help.
Insane. A quadrology, a tetralogy, who knows?
Yes, it just goes on and on. I mean, it's like people say, where's the next one? I want to know the next one. But I get involved in other things like America the Italian Dream, Yehudi.
Yeah. Well, you've also wrote, before we get to America the Italian Dream, I noticed that you also have written some children's fiction.
Yes. I wrote Yehudi Who. My late husband had throat cancer, and the two things that he missed the most after losing his voice was singing and laughing out loud. And so, in our last name being Leo, I felt my lion has lost his roar. And I wanted to write a story about it, but I didn't want a sad story. I wanted a fun story because he wasn't that kind of a person that would dwell on the sad stuff. Well, when my brother and I were very young, and we'd be doing something, and our dad would yell, "You better stop it, or the Yehudi Who is going to get you." Well, we were always afraid to find out what a Yehudi Who was. We never asked.
Sure.
So I wrote a book about it, and I got a 12-year-old to do the illustrations in it, which just absolutely thrilled me. Yes, he was so good. And also, the book was chosen by the literacy company for software helping children read faster with better comprehension and recall. And I thought,
great!
Yeah, I thought that was terrific. Absolutely terrific. Yes.
Before we talk about America, the Italian Dream, if people want to find out about your books, you have a webpage.
Oh, absolutely. It's www.booksbyleo.com. All together.
Booksbyleo.com. Okay. Now, are all of the books that you've written self-published, or are any of them commercially published?
They're all self-published. All self-published. I found out.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I want to hear what you said. Go ahead.
Well, it's very difficult. I got lucky with Durant being my first book because Borders called me. I mean, I kept thinking, I'm an unknown author. I'm self-published. How am I ever going to get this book in a bookstore? I have to go on bended knee and beg, and I couldn't.
It's the hardest thing about self-publishing.
Oh, hardest thing.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe Borders called me, and they said, "We just saw the article in the paper. We want your book." And now, since then, they have stopped putting more self-published books in their stores.
Right.
Back then, you know, it was several years ago, of course, and they took everything I gave them. And they sold a lot of them, too, by the way, Borders, in case you're listening.
And additionally, of course, your books are available on Amazon.
Oh, they're on Amazon. Oh, sure. And you can always get them directly from me.
At booksbyleo.com.
Yes, they can find my email. Yeah. And they can always contact me to get them. Or on Amazon. I sell a lot through Amazon. Amazon is great. I love Amazon.
and for writers who are listening, if you write a book and publish it, the way you publish it, self-publish it, is in part you get it printed, but you need to get what's an ISBN number, right?
Oh, yes. Okay. And there are some great books out there on self-publishing. A friend of mine, Eileen Barron, she's like my guru because I still will ask her questions when I'm coming out with another book. You know, I'll forget something.
Sure.
But there's a lot of books out there about it. But everybody, if you're writing a book, if you're just working on it, whether you finished it or not, really should belong to a writer's club because only writers understand other writers. And we all need each other to keep us going.
Right. And I want you to elucidate further on that in a second with a question I'll ask you, but I also want to use this opportunity for self-promotion. If anyone is a small investor or potential small investor and wants to find out about investing in mobile homes, you can go to my book by going to tinyurl.com/mobilemillionaire. Getting back to writers' organizations, let's say someone lives in Peoria, Illinois. How would they find the Writers Club in their area?
Go to the library. The library always knows all the clubs. And by the way, I looked at your website and I loved it.
Which one of mine did you look at? I have a couple of things going. Which one did you look at?
The one you were.
Oh, you looked at that, the book.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, that
thank
was
you.
Great.
That's very kind.
In fact, my sister lives about.
The check is on the way, Mabel.
I thank you. Yours too.
Okay, good. No, that's very kind of you to say. Thank you. And but go to the library to find your writers' organization. As
yes,
you say, writers
you.
Understand other writers, and more importantly, in one sense, are usually full of tips and advice and suggestions.
Yes, that's another thing. And like my group, the Phoenix Writers Club, of which I'm president. We are very upbeat. We're very positive. We don't allow any negative thinking. You know, I had a girl call me up one night. She said, can I come over? She's almost in tears. She said, the critique group has torn my book apart. They said, throw it away.
Yeah, crazy.
It's garbage. She brought it over. I just scanned through it. I said, it's a great story. It just needs work.
Yeah.
It needs editing.
Yeah.
But it's a great. She ended up selling it to a major book publisher.
That's
so
great.
We just do know. It cannot be your best working at.
Yeah. Yeah, some people have a need to be negative and destroy other people's dreams
exactly.
for reasons I don't understand.
That doesn't happen in our group.
Okay, America the Italian Dream.
Yes. My husband was Italian, and every time there was another movie on about, you know, the mafia, he'd walk around the house yelling, basta, enough already.
Our
mobsters. And so I said, well, do something. He said, well, I'll write a book. Well, he died and didn't get to do that. Well, while I was waiting for this agent to read my Durant story, I thought, I can interview Italians, and so I did.
You had lived with one.
I had lived with one for 20 years, and so I got Colangelo, I got Arpaio, I got Frankie Lane, I got Sonny Bono, and I got mostly just ordinary people trying to get through every day by like everybody else. But I took the
Okay, I have to interject here just real quick, because most people don't know the name Frankie Lane. They're not as old as I am.
Yeah,
I know you only read about Frankie Lane and interviewed him when he was, but anyway, but Frankie Lane was a singer, and the two songs he's most famous for probably are Look Down That Lonesome Road and also the theme song for Rawhide, if you ever see that old TV show.
Yes.
What's that?
He was Mule Train.
That's right, Mule Train. That too.
He was fabulous. Anyway, he was very, very nice to me. And everybody was. I only had one person turn me down, but everybody was so nice. I have pictures of each one in here, and I told each one of those that I interviewed, this is your story. I don't change it at all. All I do is edit it because, God help me, if I misspell an Italian name. But and everybody kept saying, Mabel, you don't.
Basta.
Yeah, basta. You do not let them read what you're going to write about. I said, yes, you do. This is their story. And I've had one couple call me, Mabel, we just cried when we read this. They just didn't. And then our kids couldn't believe that we had done all this. They want another book. I mean, it was a tribute to my late husband. It was a book of
love. Yeah, that's terrific. A lot of people, by the way, cry when they read what I've written, but it's only because it's so horrible. But in your case, it was different. Mabel, I'm going to let you go. We're running out of time, and I just have about one more thing to do before we end the show. But I want to thank you again, booksbyleo.com.
Yes.
I really think we really did not have enough time to fully discuss all of the things that you are doing, and I'd like to talk to you on air again about some more things. So if you'd be interested, I'd like to have you back at another time.
You just let me know when. And thank you ever so much for this opportunity. Bye, everybody.
Okay, you've been a delight. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. And we are still here. I want to re-mention, before we do our endpoint essay, two of the websites, tinyurl.com/mobilemillionaire, which Mabel was kind enough to recommend, and for your child pet, petlane.com/bushman. And now we have our endpoint essay, and we'll have a few minutes afterwards in the event you want to call in, or if not, for me to talk about a couple of other quick things. And our essay is on Veterans Day. I've always had a problem with Veterans Day. I love the 4th of July and Labor Day is fine. Thanksgiving always seemed a little too religious for my taste. And the year-end religious holidays? No thanks. But Veterans Day is different. I'm not one of those people who goes up to a member of the armed services and says, thank you for your service. Besides the fact that the sayings become a cliche, And the soldiers, sailors, and Marines make fun of politicians who say that on their obligatory hospital visits. I'm not sure what the saying really means. I greatly admire the women and men who go into the military, though I'm not a jingoistic super patriot who thinks this country should fight everyone who disagrees with us. I think that the people who go into the military are brave. And in terms of disagreeing with politics and policy of our government from time to time, that's different from being negative towards our service members and veterans. Even when they're misused, they're not doing the misusing. They joined to serve our country, and that's a noble sentiment, but it's more than that. Some of the folks who join the Army or Air Force or the Navy or the Marines are possessed of that youthful conviction that nothing could possibly happen to them. I suspect, however, that they know sooner or later better than that, and that they realize that when they see what happens to others who serve their country in the military. My problem with Veterans Day is not those who served today or served yesterday. Even when they're not being taken care of the way they should be and are being put into harm's way when they shouldn't, they are what can only be described as a word I used earlier, noble. My dad was a soldier in the last war that everyone agreed was a good one. And the people who served in that war prevented an even worse disaster in Europe and the rest of the world than the one that happened when a mustachioed dictator tried to be the next Napoleon or Alexander. But the people who've served since have also protected our country. Not in Afghanistan or Iraq or Vietnam or Korea. They've protected our country by existing. They've kept us free and safer than we otherwise would have been because their presence says to other countries what some of our early patriots said on their flags, "Don't tread on me." So we certainly owe them our thanks and whatever we can provide them in terms of benefits such as schooling, medical care, including mental health treatment, and financing for their home. Now, my problem isn't with veterans. It's with Veterans Day. My difficulty is that those who seem to revel in its celebration also celebrate war. They speak misguidedly, as did our former president, about fighting them there so we won't have to fight them here. Those who talk incessantly about our veterans or supporting our troops don't understand that honoring these brave men and women doesn't mean agreement with the policy which dictates that they be sent to risk injury, death, and dismemberment. My problem is that when I say something good and true about our vets, some of these morons will think I agree with them. That's our end point. We don't have enough time for you to call in, but I'd like to briefly tell you that next week, which is going to be the, I have to look here, today is the 12th, so next week is going to be the 19th, and as a matter of fact, we don't have a guest next week, but we're looking to schedule one, but the following week, we do have a guest, and we'll be discussing astrology, among other things, so if you have any possible interest in that, please join us, and join us next week. For a guest to be announced. We're keeping it as a surprise because I don't even know yet. But we'll be having another guest next week, hopefully, and one on Thanksgiving. And the astrology guest will be my lovely wife, Alicia, who is not in the sumptuous Bushman studio right now. But we will have that discussion, as I say, in 2 weeks. You can join us next week at 347-994-3796, and you can listen to all of our past shows at the same site you came to listen to this one. They are available on demand, and they are archived at blogtalkradio.com/Jeff-Bushman. And we also want to remind you of jeffonblogging.blogspot.com. We will share one more story with you if I can find it in the few remaining seconds we have. Ah, yes, it's on Procter & Gamble and lovely Charmin. And here's the story. We have about 60 seconds. Procter & Gamble announced that it will once again create and host a public restroom for the holiday season in New York City's Times Square as promotion for Charmin. This year, an improvement over last year, they're hiring 5 bloggers as Charmin ambassadors to interact with the expected hundreds of thousands of bathroom guests and write about their experiences with Charmin on the company's website. And it's going to be called Enjoy the Go. That's our show for tonight. We'd be thrilled and honored if you joined us next week. Same bat time, same bat station. That'll be 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 Eastern. Thanks very much, And we look forward to hearing from you and being with you at that time. Join us any of these weeks. Good night.